A wise man once said, what's up? What's Gucci? What's Louis? What's Vuitton? And if you don't think that's a brilliant way of kickstarting a conversation, then I don't know what to tell you. So instead, I'll just skip on to saying welcome. So glad you could join us. And I hope you enjoy today's episode because I have a feeling it's going to be very interesting. So sit back, relax, and this is Note to Self.
We are here to fight for change in our city.
We are the Johannesburg Junior Council.
So today's note is all about navigating the private school experience as a Black child. Its implications culturally, socially, academically, the whole thing. And I say we, not because I'm talking about me and you, the audience, but because I'm lucky enough to have a special guest with me to discuss. Limza.
Hi.
Say hi.
Hi. I'm good.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks, and you?
That's good. Uh-huh.
I'm glad I could join you today.
I'm so happy to have you. And I have with me today, as you've just heard, one of my dearest friends, Asumim Zwakali, because I felt like she'd be able to contribute, I guess, not only to this episode, but even the whole series really meaningfully. And I mean, let's face it, because she's quite the activist herself. And I love that about her. And I also thought it'd be nice to have another opinion and not have people have to hear me like, yep, all alone for once. So like, yeah, guys, it's going to be fun. We have future Miss SA and future Oprah in the building all at once. And I mean, I guess we're both pretty versatile. So we'll let you guys decide who's who. But while you do that, I think we should get into business. Ashume, would you like to say a few words, give your own intro maybe?
I'm Ashume Mzwakali. I am Tando's friend, as she said, and I'm just excited to be here with you guys today and just discuss some things that we don't really dive into, so I'm excited.
Mm. I'm glad, so am I, dude. So where do we begin? I mean, being Black is like a big balancing act itself, so when you mix it like with other things, like private school or I guess predominantly white spaces or whatever, like anything that really requires you to, I guess, assimilate, like it becomes a whole other mission. And I think that's what we really wanted to convey or touch on today.
Yeah,
that whole split personality thing that Black kids have to do to like validate their existence in two opposing worlds.
We definitely deal with a lot being a minority in these institutions that we go to. And of course, just being split into two different worlds, like you feel stuck between the two, so it's very complicated.
Yeah, I think like for us it's fairly easy to understand because like, you know, lived experience, but I think we should like get into specifying like what that whole split thing is or what I guess makes it feel that way.
Okay,
would you like to?
I'll definitely. So I've been to private schools all my life. I don't know any other. So when you're in that space, you basically caught between two worlds because it's either you sacrifice yourself to fit in because these institutions aren't necessarily built for us. You sort of have to sacrifice your Blackness in a way to mingle with your just to be accepted. And of course it's hard because then when you go back home to your Black
family,
exactly, because now you're this coconut or you just see that you're not one of them. So where do you fit in? Because you're not included.
Yes, Black enough.
Yes, you're not Black enough and you're not white enough. So where exactly do you fit?
Oh, dude, sure. That's such a heavy chat because I can like personally, I guess, attest to that. Because even at school, this whole thing of like public speaking or whatting or even just like fitting in at school, that whole thing of like trying not to be too ghetto or too Black or whatever, which is actually such rubbish because regardless of what you do, you get judged. We can get into the voids and stuff later, but then already that I'm trying to like balance of, I guess, true to myself while fitting in enough and not being too much of anything for anyone, you know. And then I go to, I'd say my mom's side of the family is more chilled. I think they definitely didn't have the same experience, but I think, like, it's not that deep there. Like, it's still all good vibes. But I'd say my father's side of the family, which I'd say is a lot more traditional, it seems to be more of an issue there. And, like, this is a very public platform, but I'm going to, like, put it all out there. And I think it's kind of built a little barrier between, I guess, my brother and I and my dad's side of the family a little. Not my dad, but, like, the other immediate family, because it's like we get there and we're the kids from Joburg who like barely ever visit, like Xhosa is on 60%, like hanging on for life, but the English is like so verbose and
to them it seems like you've lost touch with yourself, and so it's very difficult for them to understand that you also just want to be one of them. So it's extremely difficult to be in that space, because we deal with a lot, and as you said, we really you don't fit in anywhere. And I think with it really depends which type of family you grew up with. So you also find that it depends which side of the family that you're on. Because for me, it depends where you are. Like, I've been called all sorts of things by cousins that will be like, oh my God, you're like an English chicken, you know, because you...
Okay, I shouldn't be laughing. That's so awful.
But it's those things, because it's like, they don't see you. They see because they think you're... boasting, or you think highly of yourself because you speak,
because you got good opportunities that they never did. Yeah,
exactly.
I get that. Like,
and then so you, now you're stuck between being grateful for where you're at in life and also just trying to
feeling bad for it.
Yes,
like it's actually really funny, because it's like, I guess as Black people, we worked so hard to like, cannot we, like our parents and whatever generations had to do it. Like, worked so hard to, I guess, afford us these opportunities. But when we get them, it's still, like, not enough.
It is.
There's still some kind of, like, backlash we're facing from our own people as well. Definitely. And, like, even outside of, I guess, a school sense, even just, like, socially. Like, when you don't speak your language that well, whatever the case may be, and you go to, like, the ladies packing, the cashier ladies at, like...
Yes.
What's it, spa, wherever, and like if you don't respond in whatever language, or if you're like, I can't hear what you're saying, like,
yes,
definitely. The looks you get, yeah,
the looks you get, you're basically an outcast. And being like, and I think that's what really we struggle with, because you just being stuck between two worlds, it's not only about being an outcast or being stuck between, but it's also now you're trying to figure out where do you see yourself in like
family? Yeah, and what do you value?
What do you value? And you just want to make sure that you're in the right position, and you don't want to be someone that you're not. So it's very difficult, because it's like a back-to-back conversation in your head. You're like, okay, so now how do I fit in at school and make sure that I haven't neglected my Black roots or culture, which it's definitely
difficult. That's what I was saying, that whole balancing act, dude, like it really really is. And these are like all the silent battles that people don't see us going through.
Exactly. And then we have problems, like, and then we face problems at school, so we see ourselves fighting a lot of battles regarding racism. And you also want to like steer away from the idea of being known as the angry Black girl.
Entirely.
That's literally what's pasted on you as soon as you start fighting those battles.
The second you open your mouth for anything, oh, why are you touched?
Definitely. Then you become this like over the top liberal, like you just too much.
You can't handle the jokes. You can't take anything. Like literally this one time, we were at the tuck shop, right? Yes. And I didn't even know what happened, but I basically said something, right? I was like, you're not like, I'm just not in the mood today. It's okay, right? Yes. And then this dude, I'm not going to say who, but let's call him,
call him a fruit, like apple.
Oh, yeah, let's call him Tomato, right?
Okay.
So Tomato, like, says something, and I'm like I don't have patience today. And then this dude's just like, oh, no, are you going to get touched? You always get touched over everything. You're always crying and complaining. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so sorry. Like, me being sick and tired of being sick and tired is such an inconvenience to you.
Definitely. They do see it as you take everything personally, which is difficult because you watch them make jokes about your existence.
And
you're expected like to
constantly
take it back. Yes, I think one thing we both agree on, and we've spoken about this, is the taking Black features to use them as comedy, such as mocking of accents. And it really like cuts deep because you're like, these are, it's not because my family that has this accent wants to, it's because they've been previously disadvantaged and they didn't really, you know, get to,
they didn't get the opportunity. Yeah, that's what irritates me about the whole black scent thing as well. And like, this is something that people engage in all the time. But what irritates me is the fact that like, they look down on even that stupid message on the group asking if the minister had a matric. People will be so quick to question the competence of black people because of that accent. But unlike the people at school who are busy like talking, they're not at liberty to like switch it off. Yes. When they go for job interviews and get looked down upon and have like little people like half their age asking, oh, are you even qualified? They can't just switch that accent off and go back to the privileged way of sounding, you know?
And it's really sad because we are often the butt of jokes, you know. We've seen it throughout history, from Sarah Batman to everything that we've just been, our existence. People often take the comedy and we joke ourselves about these things, and I always say, like, South Africans, our coping mechanism is humor.
It's humor, yeah.
But I think there's a certain point to it, because I feel like our scars are ours to poke at, and so nobody else has the right to take that away from us. So if we feel like that's how we cope, but I don't expect someone who's in a privileged position to be using
humor to cope with my scars, you know? Exactly. Like, I really do get that.
So I think we definitely go through the most.
Yeah, dude, entirely. And like, the thing that I think makes it a little worse is the fact that like, it's an inner turmoil type thing. Like,
definitely.
I couldn't be bothered to remember it exactly, but in drama, there's all these different levels of conflict that you see on a stage. I'm going to apply that personally now. But like that whole thing of like man versus self, man versus God, man versus society, whatever. I feel like man versus self is the best way to, I guess, like categorize it. And it's really intense because no one's holding a gun to your head, but at the same time, they might as well be, you know. Like this thing of, if I want to make it far in life, I have to like appeal to the masses, and in such like a, I guess, westernized society, that is the way that I can advance myself. But it's at the expense of myself, you know?
Definitely. It's our parents take us to these institutions so we can get ahead in life, and we can get the opportunities when we finish with school to be able to say that you went to an institution that's westernized and was more expensive. It does give you a bit of a head start in life. And that's what our parents do, is they take us to institutions to be able to network with, because we go to school with ministers' kids and, you know, kids that
like
are
where the opportunity is.
Yes, where the opportunities are. Kids of CEOs. And so definitely if you associate yourself with them, then you do have a better chance at getting things in life. Because our lease in South Africa is not about what you know, but it's about who you know.
And entirely.
Definitely.
Yeah, just in life. I don't even think that applies here only as well. Like, anyway, it's more about opportunity than, like, obviously the work you put in is important, but that work means nothing if you don't have that opportunity to capitalize off of it, make something of it, you know?
Exactly. So, and I think that's what we struggle with, is because it's either, if you don't go to this institution, then you're...
Like, who are you? It reminds me of a conversation we were having with a guest speaker the other day on council. And he said how, like, he's made it now, like, Forbes Africa 30 under 30, like, Melvin Rubega, I think. Like, wow. Anyways, and we asked him about the difference, I guess, in experience, like, selling a South African tech space in America. And he was like, the funny thing is that South Africans aren't equipped to... Okay, yeah, I know this is getting a bit off topic. Yeah. It's like, South Africans aren't as welcoming of failure as other nations are.
That's true.
And I just thought that was pretty interesting.
It is, because...
So that's what I'm saying, that whole, like, need of having to send your kid to this expensive school and is probably fueled from that thing of, I can't fail here.
And we're in competition with ourselves, you know, amongst each other as people, because everybody is just trying to get ahead. You know, our economy is like to the ground. It's the pits, as you would say. And so everybody is just trying to make a quick buck, trying to get ahead in life. And so that's why we don't want to make mistakes, because we don't have the opportunity to make those mistakes.
Yeah. And I think that also stems into that thing of judging other people who got the opportunities that you didn't, because like, it's a matter of everyone for themselves, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's really difficult because we haven't really dealt with our emotional pain as a country. And I think once we start dealing with those things, then we can get into, we'll be in a much
We can get place. Into the, it happened so long ago conversations when we like choose to acknowledge it now.
The JJC Podcast Experience.
Bringing you the content, the stories, and the insights.
We aspire to empower the voice of the unheard.
All right, we're back. And I think the next conversation we'd like to dive into is this whole idea of teacher bias. Now, I guess that's a pretty umbrella term for it. But what it really is, I think, outside of this whole thing of labeling things, is just the difference in, I guess, experience from like primary school to high school.
Yeah.
You know, if that's something that we can both relate to. I know, I mean, sorry, I can't be you. Like, I've gone to public schools. My whole junior school experience was public school, the same one actually. And then only from grade 8 did I guess, go to a private school. And there's been a difference, but I don't know what to tell myself, because I'm like, is it just the age thing, or is it actually an environment thing, you know?
At least for you, I think you've got to experience like the different worlds. But I also feel like, I think we have different concepts of public schools. So like, there's public schools and like, as in like township, and then we have public schools like, you know, as in they good institutions, you know, the white kids go to them. It's just,
I will. It's a fact. Kids go to them. But like, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I get
better
what you're saying.
Funded than the government schools in the townships.
You get I was gonna say, I think that's how you differentiate. So there's like public schools. I don't know if this is an actual thing or if this is just like the association in my mind. But I know there's public schools, which I think like CARES doesn't even count, but CARES, Parktown, Parktown Girls, Northcliffe, those things. And then government schools, I think more John Orr High School and.
Okay.
That might have been problematic. I actually don't know if
we don't know the difference.
Say, but you get what I'm saying, yeah. No, but yeah, you get what I'm saying.
You understand over.
Your people are probably listening like anti-private school kids think about this.
We
can just jump over that, you know. Skip. Okay, so the whole, I guess, teacher thing. So the difference in experience. Yeah, there. So yeah. I think it might be an age thing, but like, there's times where I've picked up on racism. Like, I can pinpoint race incidents, not even, let me say, microaggressional whatever instances in like primary school, but like, yeah, it's like where the big boys come to play, you know.
Definitely.
Like in high school, nobody has any shame, but like in primary school, there were little things. Like, I remember my one teacher, and I think that's also the difference. I think it might be a mix of both the age difference and like people themselves. Because in public school, I guess everything is leveled out by like class or economic status, you know?
Okay.
Like, yes, there's black people and white people, and yes, there's the differences in that itself. But then also, it's not like you're dealing with rich and poor people on top of the racial aspect. Mm-hmm. So it's more,
we're all
like,
in
I
the
guess,
same,
neutralized. Yeah.
We're all in the same arena, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's, like, a more diverse pool in public schools. That's why, I'm not saying the racism isn't as bad, but I think at least there's less problematic students, I'd hope. I don't know. But from me, like, all my primary school friends, even now, like, I can't, I mean, I can speculate, but I can't pinpoint anyone the way I can in my high school experience and be like, yeah, those ones, like raging racist, you know?
For me, the one instance that has stood out for me throughout my school career, and one that I feel guilty for not really taking up, was, I think I was in grade 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in this like school. Okay, so we used to go to camps, camp and stuff. And so when we went, so it's the day before camp and we're all planning what are we gonna pack. And so one of the activities were water activities, and so we had to bring a swimming costume. And so one of the white girls goes, "Oh, I bet all the black girls are gonna wear bikinis." And I was what is she trying to say about us? And apparently, because we're forward, we like things. We were just
these
big personalities. And so I was like, at such a young age, are you going to tell kids? But I was like, okay, she was our age. So I was like, okay. And then we went to camp. When we got there, there was a lot of racial tension. The black girl split, the white girl split, and we were just fighting with each other because we were upset because how do you box us like that?
Mm.
And then I think we told our teacher what happened. Oh, we didn't want to play a game. We wanted to play netball, and the white kids wanted to play open the gates or something. And either way, there was just a conflict.
Yeah.
And clearly, our teacher came to us and was like, "What's going on?" So we told her where our aggrieved, like why we're aggrieved and why we're upset, and she was like, "Oh no, you guys are blowing this out of proportion." And then she made us go play cards with them as a piece, like as like shoes. Wow. And I was like, as a teacher, I expected her to step in more and be
present, and do something.
And then I think what really, really annoyed me was like a few months later or sometime during that year, a black guy had a crush on a white girl. And so when we told her this, we're like, "Oh, like the guy has a crush on you." And he was one of our friends. So obviously we're trying to like convey this message to the girl. And she goes, "Oh, I'll never marry a black man because I don't want zebra kids."
Wow.
And coming from an 11-year-old, that's quite concerning.
So, guys, where do you learn language like that? Like,
definitely. So,
jeez.
And then when we tried to bring that up, we were told that we were just projecting and that we need to just calm down. Not everything's about race. And when we got to high school, the same school, something like the racial tension was getting very tense, okay?
Tense. Good tense, good tricky, go wow.
Good tense, good tricky, go wow. And so the black girls, we made a complaint and we stepped forward. And our headmistress, I actually really commend her for how she dealt with that. Mm. She sat us down. We had like a conversation and she just basically let us cry to her what happened. Everybody was in tears and we just spoke about our experiences regarding race in the school. And so that thing from grade 5 was brought up with the girl. And so she was finally taken to, like, was made accountable for it, but 3 years later, first of all. And then when it happened, they said there's a timestamp for, or away, because it was 3 years ago, she's changed, whatever, right? So I kind of understood. I was like, okay. So 3 years ago, she might not have been this person that she is now. And then I think what really set me off was when one of her friends came to me and was like, "I heard you guys went to report so-and-so." And I was like, "Yes, we did." And she was like, "I don't see anything wrong with what she said." And so you really see how these thoughts are really ingrained in people's minds. They're really like engraved. Like,
people
see things the way they want to see them, and there's no changing their minds. So that's where I think I became defeated to a point about race. But also now I'm more inspired as I get older
to speak out
about these things, because I don't want my kids to ever be in situations like that. Because truth be told, they have every right to be in that institution as much as you do.
Mm.
So nobody should be trying to level up against each other. Do you get what I mean? So
yeah,
I'm as equal as you are, because I pay the same school fees as you, and I'm here, and I have every right to be here. And
yeah, so dude,
that's definitely what frustrated me, is like, I pay the same school fees. I'm not here on charity or anything, so you need to start seeing me as a person and not undermine me because I'm black.
Mm.
So definitely what I went through.
Sure. Okay, yeah. That's intense, but at least you had like the right mind and right people around you to speak out against those things. Definitely. I think if we went on about like dodgy experiences, I have lots of stories to tell as well. I want to get into something like pretty dodgy as well.
Yes.
So I think I've got two things. One was at not necessarily the tuck shop, but like the other one, you know.
Okay.
And then another was the grade 8 story.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the like one instance where I genuinely didn't know what to do or say, you know, was when we were at the tuck shop buying lollipops. So as this whole like, oh, you're a disappointment of a black person conversation goes, the ladies at that tuck shop used to kind of hate us. Like, this is before you were here, dude. Like in grade 8, those ladies wanted nothing to do with us. Wow. Like they were so like, ugh, at us, and they were mean and rude. Like the white kids would get served, like whatever. And then us, like they'd make a point of like whispering about us in the night until one day we were like, sisters, we can hear you. Like, what? And they were like, oh, and in your theater, you guys can speak. And we're like, yes, like, what? So it was just this whole thing, right? And we ended up, like, making right with them. So some of them have been shuffled around, but, like, now the relationship is great. I get there. Sometimes I order in Bernac. Like, I ask her to see how her day's been going, blah, 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 right? So it was one of those things. We'd gone there. I think Tiana was with me. Ooh, I shouldn't be saying names, but whatever. We said it now. So a friend was with me. And what happened now? Oh, so we're ordering lollipops, right? They used to sell these lollipops for like R2 after school, like anytime really. And we'd always like buy. Like you'd get to school with no money and you'd go home having had like 5 lollipops in that day. So literally,
at school, we are very generous when it comes
to
money. Yeah. So
I get that too. Yeah.
I know, do you have coins? Like, that chat.
Yeah, like, it's like no one cares about coins, but it actually does a lot. Like, I remember this one kid used to go around asking people for like R2, and literally he'd make like R30 in a day or something. Like, it's actually such a plug. But anyway, so we ordered our little lollipop thingies, right? And as we're paying, this other lady who I think owned it at the time came and took over. I mean, I think she moved and they fired her now, but it's someone else, which is great. But still, so she comes, then she's like, oh, I'll take over it, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. We're like, oh, okay, thanks for interrupting our conversation, but sure, like, hi, man, yeah, formalities. So then, like, she gives us our things, and she's like, is that it? And we're like, yeah, like, we just came here for the lollipops. And she's just like, you know, it never ceases to amaze me. And at this point, we're all like, what? And she's like, no matter how much we educate you, you'll always go for the stock suite.
Oh, wow.
Dude. Yay. When I tell you, like, I didn't know what to say. I was like, what? I was like, sorry? And she's just like, no, like, I'm just saying. Like, it really is interesting. And she laughs and gives us our things. And I just stood there for a moment. And I was like, do I say something? And I was like, I look over to my friend. She's also like, not registering. So then I was like, okay, like, sure. And I remember, like, this was grade 8, so I was still like a little one at that time.
Yeah.
So I'm like, whoa, I'm like, what, like, what just happened?
That is shocking.
So I think, like, based on stories that I guess inspire us to speak up in future, that would probably be one of those. Yeah.
We really deal with a lot, I guess, with, because people aren't held accountable for the things they say. And so it takes, like, we have to really push for things to happen, even when we hold people accountable. So yeah. I think that's something we struggle with, is because we're constantly calling people out, constantly fighting. I've been to more admin offices in my high school career than I shouldn't have, because I'm busy trying to fight a fight. That shouldn't be my fight. It should be a fight that we're past. Do you get it?
Exactly. And I think even if it's a fight that we're currently engaging in, the reason there's so many angry black girls is because there's so few structures supporting that fight, you know?
Definitely.
Like, we're the ones constantly making noise and trying to hold people accountable and advocating for ourselves and our experiences. And it's seen as we're the ones with an issue because we're the ones speaking out about it, when really we shouldn't have to be the only ones.
Definitely.
You know?
we really are the ones. And then it gets really difficult because there are some people who don't want to get into those things, and because those conversations are heavy for them. And so sometimes you feel like your own black
also this thing of
sort of give you up. They're just like, no, it's just chill, leave it. And that's where I get personally, it really hurts when I try to speak for a fellow black student.
And they're like, no, it's okay, it's a joke, it's this, it's that.
Yeah,
I think that's another issue. It really is
that deep.
As well, yeah. Like, there's been so many times where I've wanted to jump into things, but it's also a matter of picking my battles. Like, I'm trying to balance, like, doing what I see fit and not trying to create a reputation for myself, you know? So, like, there's been times where, especially for the black boys, I want to hop in, and not even for the sake of them, but for the sake of myself, because their transgressions, like, affect us as the black girls more, you know? Like, when they, like, let their friends say nigga, when they let people make jokes like this, I'm like, that feeling stops being a joke when it gets to me. But it's a joke for you, so I must put up with it, you know?
It's that whole inward chat is, like, a whole conversation, because now they are people that aren't supposed to say the N-word, and they come say it to you, and I will question, why are you referring to me as that? And they're like, no, a friend of mine gave me a pause. And when you
start to tell you something,
you affect the whole black race when you're giving passes on behalf of people. I don't want to ever give a friend of mine a pause to call me a derogatory term, and so I don't expect your friends to come call me that.
Exactly. Even on an individual basis, like, why is your friend, like, black man of the century? Like, why are they speaking on behalf of an entire race to give you, the one outstanding white person, a pass to say that word? And, like, there's this one dude who posted about it on Instagram. I pray to God it was a joke, but even if it was, like, it made me feel, like, some type of way, dude. Because it's, like, this little Photoshopped placard type thing. And it's, like, Thingy the Honcho has been given an N-word pass by this guy and this one, co-signed by blah, 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 blah. And you guys joke about this, and then you'll be the first to jam J. Cole when he says, white people don't respect us, busy calling us niggas in the streets. He'll be like, bars, bars. But what are you doing with your friends?
Exactly. Like, it's those little aggressions, it's the microaggressions that really build up, because and by the way, these kids leave high school. Varsity is a whole other world. You're not going to be sheltered and protected by people when you do these things. You will be held accountable. So it's really alarming that when they're in high school, because everything's in a bubble, and so everyone's protected, and then when you go out into the world, it will really be a shock.
Someone will slap you into your mother's womb, dude, if you say things like that. Just because your friends laughed in high school, it's not the same in the real world.
Exactly,
maybe.
Definitely.
Yeah. And then another thing, like, speaking of, I guess, being seen, I don't know if, I think I told you the story, like, a few days ago, but, like, I think I might need a second opinion again, the class captain thing.
Okay.
I took that kind of personally, and it makes me, I guess, question the deeper issue in things, like, seeing as to how, like, to my knowledge and the knowledge of, I guess, everyone I've asked, I don't think our school has had a black head boy. Like, we've had deputies, but we've never had a head. And in my time there, I've seen plenty of people who could have filled those shoes.
Yes.
So, like, don't get me into the whole prefect system as a whole, but from even what it is now, there's people who are eligible for that. And what it says to me is that the school doesn't recognize black men as leaders, you know, like, in the highest degree. Because, of course, deputy is great, but, like, the face, the actual main head, I would like to see a black dude there. So hopefully that changes in our year, but I have no idea. And it just got me into that whole conversation and the whole grade 8 thing, where we had class captain voting, and Sir just picked someone, a white girl, as who he said stuck out to him as a leader. And literally, people created a fuss. This one dude was like, no, we didn't vote for this. The whole class was like, we didn't vote for this. It's not fair. Can we please have a proper vote then? So it was like, okay. We did a proper vote. I beat this chick by like 4 people. And Sir turns around and lies, and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, you guys tied. So I'll have so-and-so speak to you and give you your, not class captain, man, what's this thing? Oh, let's just call it class captain, actually, yeah. This class captain badge and have it, like, done right, blah, 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 blah. And I think I admit that that hurt me because I really like, I guess, like, creating a good reputation for myself, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I actually do try. I did my best. Like, I wanted that position. But Sir wouldn't even think twice about me. And it means that those efforts did something if the whole class could recognize that I was the one they wanted to vote for, you know?
Yes.
And Sir was like, no, I see this white girl who's fairly good at academics. She doesn't even interact with the class. Like, she really did not even interact with the class. Yes. She had, like, one best friend. And that was it. But that's who's going to be recognized as a leader first and foremost. And I think maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it was really disheartening.
I can imagine.
And even in general, and I think this man in general just like jailers me, dude. Because even this one time, they needed to hand out, what's it called? Like little slips for the high school expo or whatever happening, the career day. And he came to our Afrikaans class, right? My reg teacher. Comes to Afrikaans class, and then he finds me, and he's like, oh, okay. He's like, see you here. And I forgot what he said. You can ask Tembi. I'm just going to say names. It's okay. Yeah. You can ask Tembi. But, like, he, like, had me low-key. He said something like, oh, yeah, I'm always, like, late or disorganized or whatever or what. And I was like, what was the point of that? Like, it was literally in front of my entire class. And I know it's just bands because we've got a pretty good relationship. But I was like, Sir, that was so uncalled for. And I said, Sir, and then it's like, no, I'm just kidding. And he's like, actually, it's good that I found you because I forgot to give your class this. Could you please find everyone and hand it out for me? And I jumped at my opportunity, hey? I was like, oh, Sir, I can see where I get my disorganization from now, hey? I was like, look at you. Then now, dude, like, it's me and you now.
But we're in the same boat.
Yeah, and I was like, we are the same.
Of African time is so annoying because I don't know how you box a whole race into being not punctual.
Not punctual.
It's really...
No, I kind of fight it. Like, I hate the fact that... It's the same thing that we were talking about earlier. This whole thing of, like being able to pick and like poke at our own scars, but if someone else does it, it's like, no, like you're not coming from the same place of experience. Because I'm like, if a white person were to like tune me African timing, I'd be like, first of all, Sir, shut up. Second of all, shut up. But if I'm like, oh, y'all, like, oh, my family has no concept of time because they really don't, like, it's different, you know?
It's different because it's our bruises to poke at and theirs to keep away from.
Yeah, and I think it comes from, like, I guess the surety of intention. I know that when I say jokes like that, I'm just saying it out of, like, experience or to make light of something that actually really irritates or bothers me. But if someone who's not of my race says that, what it feels like is you're attacking something, and I can actually never truly know if it was just a joke or if it's something you're repeating or if it's the kinds of things that you say or jokes that you make to reinforce whatever underlying negative opinions you already hold, you know?
Definitely. Of course. And I think that's why it's just that whole idea of it's when I point it out, it's okay because that's my fight, it's my struggle. And then, there's actually this poem I read. It was about hair, though, and it was about a white girl complaining that blondes don't really, or no, gingers, like, you know, red-haired people have a hard time, which I acknowledge they struggle. But they basically, this company had compared their struggle to the struggle of a black woman.
And it's like when people compare Jewish people to black people. And I'm
this lady said something so deep. She said, because black people can't have anything for themselves, not even their anger. And so everybody wants to hop onto that train, I guess. Where, you know, and it struck me because we deal with that.
What's it called? The like privilege Paralympics or oppression Olympics. That's what we came to call it at debating.
Definitely.
But yeah, sure. And that's really intense, dude. Like, I feel like that's where the whole nigger thing comes from as well. Like, black people could just never have anything for themselves or any kind of recognition or, like, reparation for the past, you know? All we're allowed to do is be thankful that it's over and move on.
Definitely.
Because dwelling on that makes other people uncomfortable. It's really messed up, but yeah.
And
there's...
Yes?
Yeah?
Oh, no, I was definitely agreeing to that point because it's definitely a struggle that we still have to overcome. But hopefully we'll heal from these things one day, you know, there'll come a time.
Yeah, and I think one of my favorite things that's, I guess, applicable in many senses is you can't heal from things you refuse to acknowledge or feel. Exactly. And so, I think that's, yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. We need to start, even, that's why I have such a problem with the whole Rainbow Nation phenomenon, because until we realize and we recognize our past, South Africa
that will... That the rainbow...
That we are not a rainbow nation until we confront those things. It's like a part we took a band-aid and we covered our wounds and we said
wounds, hey, and expected that to fix it all.
Exactly. While that wound is infected now and it's time for us to actually rip that band-aid off and actually like clean it out, you know, put some dental, like,
yeah,
you know,
and stop putting the ointment on, like putting in the work. Yeah.
Yes.
There's no way that something so awful could be dealt with so like swiftly and comfortably. I think people often confuse this whole thing of something being like, I guess, made illegal with it being made right.
Definitely. You know,
like the same with, I guess, slavery. Emancipation meant the end, supposedly. Like, just because something ended, it doesn't mean it like undoes centuries of mistreatment.
Exactly.
And I think the second we start to make distinctions like that, like you said, and actually addressing those wounds. And realize the rainbow, it's not a rainbow. It's really black and white right now. But we can add those colors, you know?
Definitely.
Like, what a lame statement. But yeah.
We need to start seeing color. And that's what some girls, and it really stuck with me, is we need to, if you see my color, you see me for who I am. If you say you don't see color, then you don't see me.
It doesn't help anything. Yeah.
Definitely.
Because that's what, and that's very true, because that's what creates those like misunderstandings of, oh no, like this can't be valid, because you start applying it generally and not looking at like the historical context, you know?
Yes.
Like, especially that's what makes microaggression specifically so tricky, because it's one of those things where you could argue, oh, this was just me thinking like this. You can try and justify it, but at the core of it, you're refusing to acknowledge the racial aspect of it is what makes it a problem. Like the H&M thing.
Exactly.
How everyone's like, no, it's not racist. I call my little cousin Monkey. Yeah, because he's white.
Exactly.
Like there was no Masa or whatever busy calling them a monkey back in the day as well. That's why that makes that okay.
True. And so we
I'm getting into like different preachers now. Yeah.
We definitely need to start seeing color, even in our institutions. We need to accept, okay, you're black, I'm white, and that's okay, you know?
How do you cater towards that? Yeah.
Exactly. How do you see me for my struggles and respect that I'm coming from a disadvantaged past? You know, you've had a head start in life, white privilege. You have the privilege because of your skin color. And I just need you to see that I don't have that privilege. I'm not asking you to pay for your ancestors' sins. I'm asking you to acknowledge them.
Yes.
Acknowledge that you benefit from them.
Yeah.
So that's,
and I think,
that's definitely where I'm at, is I just want people, I don't need white people to feel bad for what their ancestors did. I want
them. You need to be aware. Yeah.
I need them to be aware and know that they benefit from that, because we could only heal together once that's acknowledged.
Yeah. No, I entirely agree, dude. 100%. And I think there's so many more, I guess, conversations we could dive into. Like, I know personally there's still a lot I could branch off into from here, but I think we've spoken people's ears off enough.
Yeah.
And I might just have to invite you back for part 2 then, if that's what it needs to be.
Yeah,
I entirely agree. It's yes, it's still a very interesting time to be alive in. And I remember this conversation I was having like a couple of years ago, whatever, about this whole idea of, oh, but you're at a private school, so clearly like you're just as white privileged as I am, you know?
No,
definitely. And exactly, definitely not. And I think something interesting to understand in that as well was like, I guess, the timeline. How you step back a generation and not much changes for a lot of our white peers, you know? Like, you still have mothers who graduated from Rodine. You still have fathers who were St. John's old boys. And then if you take that step back, like, in, I guess, a black context, there was apartheid.
Yeah.
There was my mother having to walk, like, all the way from her house, like, over the hills and what, with her brother. Because they couldn't go to the closest school because that was a white people's school. And that's a true story. So it's things like that that are like, I'm first generation of this in my family and you're not. And that's what makes me being here different from you being here.
Exactly. Is you're not a legacy, you know?
Yeah, I'm not a legacy kid. And those are the things that don't get addressed or understood when people refuse to see race, you know?
Definitely.
And I think it's really good that we're having conversations like this. Really? I hope people are listening because that would be really good to get those insights as well. And I'm so thankful you were here, friend.
Thank you.
Like, so I really can't wait to do this again.
I really enjoyed this. It was
so great. Did I.
Awesome. Getting to offload all those things that we feel.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And I think we still need to start taking these up the relevant avenues as well, but
yes, we can't complain and they're not, like, you know, we need to actually
do anything. Yeah,
forward and saying, okay, this is my complaint, because we can only complain amongst each other for so long.
Entirely. Yeah. Dude, genuinely, the only thing that's really going to help is speaking up, whether that makes you crazy, whether it makes you anything, it's fine.
Definitely.
Like, until systems collapse and change, this is our superpower, you know?
Definitely. And so that was, I think that's really, that's why I'm trying to really start complaining about these things, not just ranting to my friends, because how is the...
Yeah, and shamelessly, dude.
Exactly. How is the institution supposed to know if we don't...
speak out.
We don't.
And I feel like this thing of like only speaking to each other also like undermines us a lot more, because by the time we finally built the courage to like say something, it's always like they've also had the time to come up with excuses to further ignore us. Oh, why didn't you report when it happened? Or what are we supposed to do about that now? Or we can't force people to change.
This podcast was brought to you by the Johannesburg Junior Council in partnership with Red Radio.